focusing over this with what you and JT and perhaps some friction.
That's still going on?
Yeah, well, it has been.
Well, that's the same answer. It's good. I don't know why people still try and make up. Excuse my language, but yeah, that's my response.
So it hasn't been distracting
you? Oh my God. Next question.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk. And yeah, as you heard there, Elias Pettersson, not sure why people keep making things up. What was that from? Like mid-December-ish? Early December?
No, man.
Less than 2 months ago. And here's the president of the organization.
The noise, that's all about you guys.
Yeah.
I mean, our eyes should roll out of our heads every time anyone ever says anything like that again. I mean, they do out of mine anyway. I keep having to pick them up off the locker room floor, but
you're the problem.
I know. Well, sorry. Clearly. Same media, no cup. That's all I'm saying.
Dang media noise.
No, but I mean, yeah. What was interesting about that, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was never the denials. It was Talkett and Hughes' commentary beforehand.
Yes. And one thing that Elliot Friedman, and by the way, we are coming live from the Kintech studio here, and 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. One thing that Elliot Friedman has mentioned during the course of his reporting on this subject is it's not just that it's affecting the two players right now, but that it's kind of other key members of the organization are tired of it, are tired of dealing with it. And when you think about, you know, who those key members could be, who holds that much weight, it's, you know, the coach and the captain. So I think it's very telling, actually, that Rick Tocchet and Quinn Hughes were the ones to kind of publicly acknowledge it and address it, where Elias Pettersson and JT Miller refused to, because if you're wondering, like, well, how did things gotten to this point that they're considering trading one or both of them, I think a part of the answer could be if the coach and the captain are really sick of it, that's going to move the needle for management, especially Quinn Hughes, who they are so intent on trying to figure out how to keep here. So in retrospect, Hughes and Tocchet coming out being up front and the other two guys not, I think that was a very important moment. And that told us a lot about where this was going, or should have told us a lot about where this was going.
Also, you had the Hughes-Tocchet acknowledgement.
Mm-hmm.
You had the player denials. And then a week later, on the other side of Christmas, maybe 10 days later, you had Alvin saying, I want to see our guys take accountability. So I don't know if the club itself was impressed with those denials.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention the fact that now, sort of with what's transpired since, I mean, I think Canucks fans have a right to be annoyed, right? Like, there were a lot of Canucks fans who were like, you know, when Canucks fans were defending the team, effectively being like, this is unfair to these players, they've come out and denied it, what more do you want? It's not like they're doing it out of they're not attacking media, asking the question out of a sense of just, like, wanting to do that. They're trying to have their favorite players' backs.
Mm-hmm.
They're misled.
Yeah, and there certainly is a lot of anger and a lot of frustration to go around, some with the players, but a lot at management as well that I'm seeing on social media and that's coming in to the Dunbar Lumber text line. And I'll try to deal with some of the big questions or the common ones that are coming in here. And one of them is, and this I think is a very fair question, but Jim Rutherford is acknowledging that this isn't a new issue. Right. He says, you know, hey, we've worked on it. The parties have worked on it. We thought we'd had it solved, but then it just keeps coming back. And so with that in mind, if you knew this was an issue, why did you sign both of these players to long-term big money contract extensions, which, of course, both happened under this regime? First, JT Miller, and then just last season, less than 12 months ago, Elias Pettersson. Again, I think that's a fair question. I do think, because one, you know, we've all said this over the course of covering this story over the last couple of months and talking about it, we all know not every teammate gets along. Of course not every teammate gets along. There are locker rooms where, you know, guys maybe don't like each other that much. They're not best friends. But they find a way to work through it. They find a way to cooperate. They find a way to play for each other and be part of a team. And so as much as I get the hindsight of looking back and saying, man, how did you sign both of these guys? I can also understand if management was thinking, okay, these guys don't like each other, so what? They'll figure it out. That's what guys do in the NHL. They'll figure it out. I don't think that was an unreasonable position necessarily to take, as much as it has now clearly blown up in their face after the fact. But if you think, you know, even going back to them signing JT Miller, that would have been a pretty bold move to trade JT Miller away or decline to sign him because of his personality and how it interacted with Elias Pettersson. Not saying it would have been an impossible move, but like you have to not just know that they don't get along, but know that it's untenable to go down that road. And I think they just didn't think it was untenable. They thought these guys would be able to figure it out like most teammates in this position or similar positions have in the past.
Yeah. I mean, and look, the fact that they both extended here is a really meaningful data point that suggests that hope
that they thought it was
not misplaced.
Yeah.
Like these guys, you know, JT Miller signed up knowing surely that keeping Pettersson was going to be a priority for the club. Pettersson mm-hmm. signed up knowing that JT Miller was going to be here for most of the duration of that contract. Like, you don't do that. You don't sign up to remain at a workplace you're not happy with typically, especially when you're highly marketable elite players mm-hmm. as both of these gentlemen are. Right? So
it just feels like everyone kind of misread the situation. You know what I mean? Like management misread the situation, but the two players did as well. And I don't know how much, at least for Pettersson, the team success of last season played into that. That he was like, okay, well, hey, we're winning now, so I don't love it, but I'll sign up for that if we can find a way to win together. But it just feels like a situation where everybody got this wrong. Because you're right. If they knew, oh, no, 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 this is impossible, I can't do this, then why on earth would you sign those deals? It's not like Pettersson could have got that deal anywhere.
Anywhere.
Why were you so, like, remember last year it was, they threatened to trade him to Carolina, kind of? Like, hey, we've got this deal on the table, we'll trade you if you don't sign. If you were so unhappy here, just get traded to Carolina and sign a deal there. That was an option on the table for him. He easily could have done that. If he desperately wanted out of Vancouver, that was an option on the table. So, man, what transpired between then and now, I have absolutely no idea. We have people texting in, like, what happened between these two guys? I have no idea. I don't know. I don't know if there was one incident. I don't know if it was just the culmination of a million little incidents over the years. Who knows? But it is a baffling question. Why on earth did everyone agree to sign up for this long term and then it goes this bad less than a year later? I don't think we're going to get the answer to that, or at least a satisfactory answer to that anytime soon.
Well, and the emotions run too deep line is mm-hmm. is weighty, right? Suggests that this is, like, I don't know what happened this year by any means. You know, I wonder how much there is a just personality difference, like if it's as simple as just oil and water.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's been a lot that this team's gone through that's been, when you really unpack the 6 years that this core has played together, you have that 2019-20 season. I never heard anything about Discord. I think there were players that got on each other's nerves. I certainly heard rumblings about players that like didn't like Jake Virtanen or stuff like that, but like nothing there.
But like normal team stuff.
Normal team stuff, and certainly nothing between 9 and 40 who were line mates throughout that season.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise in the bubble, never heard anything about it. Like it just never was on my radar or anything. Then you have the bubble season, which was obviously a very challenging season. Whole team gets COVID. Pettersson gets hurt. JT Miller misses the start of the season with COVID. Team lost Tanev, lost Markstrom. I think that those still loom really large in my imagination. And not my imagination, like what I hear and sort of what I know. Like I do think certainly losing Markstrom and Tanev, I think really weakened Travis Green's ability to communicate with those players. I think those guys were important vets.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the coach's relationship with the team, especially Markstrom, who has a unique kinship with Green. And then obviously Tanev's the guy who like has guys over, like, hey, you guys want to learn how to cook? You know, like they called him dad, right?
Yep.
I think that those, so you end up in this situation where I do think you end up with something of a leadership vacuum, and then Pettersson misses the whole thing. You remember JT does the Zoom, stands up for the team, right? Like, really incredibly sort of fundamentally gets the season pushed back to benefit Canucks players in the wake of COVID. There were some whispers at that time about, like, should Pettersson have played? Like, could Pettersson have played through the wrist injury? But the season was lost, and we know that he struggled the next year. So I don't know. I never really took it that seriously, but I did hear some rumors of that at the time, some rumblings of that. And then the next season, you have Pettersson playing really poorly, and Green gets fired. And, like, do you remember the Pittsburgh loss? And the,
yep.
And the it was me. I asked JT specifically, is everyone buying in? Remember? And he mm-hmm. didn't really have an answer. That was sort of the dying days of Green's tenure. And, you know, that's when I started to hear certain things about it. Again, I don't know too many specifics. I probably should get on the phone with some people and see if I can get it. But the, you know, the truth is that that's where I started to hear that there were some things there, something there. I didn't know what it was, but something there. And then it went away last season. I didn't hear much about it. And the team was playing so well, and you could see them, like, celebrating goals together and playing well. And, you know, both guys signed. So I sort of just assumed that it was in the rearview mirror. I'm here for the hockey and, like, the cap machinations and, like, how teams approach team building. I'm not really that interested in the he said, she said.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Canucks, though, so I have to do it a lot. But the – so it's, you know, it just seemed to me to be something in the past. But apparently not.
No, apparently it is very
and I don't
much
have
still going on.
I don't have details. I don't have specific details about what happened this season. Like, what I kind of have a sense of is this. Since training camp, there's been something wrong. Since training, like, there's been frustration with how the group was handling itself dating back to training camp. Like, right off the jump. Internally, there was a sense of that. I didn't really catch wind of it until later on, but I think this has been going on all season. And then reading between the lines of people I talked to, just the sense of exhaustion internally has surprised me, especially over the past 6 weeks. Like, it has to be worse behind the scenes than even we're speculating.
How could it not be? It to get this public, there's no way we're hearing 100% of what's going on. And think about how many times Rick Tocchet has referenced, like, all the work he's putting in, all the things he's had to deal with. It was just the other day where he commented on, you know, sometimes you put so much effort into individual players that you forget almost about the other players on the team. Like, Rick Tocchet has been alluding to just how exhausting it's been for him a lot this year. You know, Quinn Hughes telling IMAC the other day that he feels responsible for the turmoil the group is dealing with. I think that's a huge tell here is that, again, as Elliot Friedman has been suggesting, as the quotes from Rick Tocchet suggest, all of that, it's not just, oh, Miller and Pettersson aren't getting along. It's having this massive impact on the rest of the team that's exhausting them, that's just making it very, very difficult for them to do their jobs. This text comes in, and again, along these lines, we've got quite a few of texts like this. This one, unsigned. Rutherford's interview feels super corporate CYA to me. Dump it all on the two-star players rather than accepting responsibility for letting key coaches and character players walk. And I've seen this line.
CYA, like, cover your arse?
Yeah, cover your arse, yes. Cover your ass. We can just say ass, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, I thought it literally stood for arse.
What?
I thought it was British.
That'd be weird if it stood for arse.
I'm pretty sure it does. I'm pretty sure it's British, like, British-originated. Right. What do they call it when it's a...
I don't know.
One of those three-letter things?
Acronym.
An acronym. This device you use to scoop
one
food.
Of those three-letter things? I've seen a lot of criticism along these lines, which is like, oh, this is just a distraction from, you know, in this case, letting coaches and character players walk, or from, you know, why is he doing this instead of building a better blue line? The blue line is an issue. We all know the blue line is an issue. But you think about some of the shocking levels of effort we've seen from these players over the course of this season. Like, think back to that LA Kings game. That wasn't that long ago, guys. Think back to how JT Miller played in that LA Kings game. The defensive effort that he showed, or the lack of defensive effort that he showed in that game. That's not Vincent Desharnais' fault. A lack of puck moving on the blue line does not produce efforts like that from your star player. Think about how Elias Pettersson has played hot potato with the puck on the power play so often this year, right? How indecisive and deferential he's been with the puck this year. I'm not talking about, oh, he's not getting good opportunities off the rush. I'm talking about when he has the puck in the offensive zone on the power play. That's not the fault of the blue line. That's those guys not being engaged, not being committed in the moment. That's on them. Now, has management pushed all the right buttons? No, probably not. I think back to, remember when Elliot Friedman reported that the organization had tasked Miller and Hughes with toughening PD up early in the year? That's a wild one to consider now. Like, wow, do I think if that happened as described, do I think that was a smart idea? No, I don't. So I'm not saying management is blameless here, but the idea that, oh, this is all a distraction because the real issue is the roster's just not good enough. The roster's deeply flawed. Of course it is. But you can't draw a straight line between the lack of puck moving and the specific problems we're seeing from Miller and Pettersson and from the team as a whole. As Jim Rutherford says, you think it's easy to be consistent in these circumstances? It's clear. And we have people even yesterday like, well, what, the whole team just forgot to score? Isn't it more likely that it's Rick Tocchet's system? Like, no, I think the most likely thing is it's a miserable environment to be in right now, and it's very, very difficult to perform in those circumstances.
Also, like, we went over it. You know, like, Canucks forwards are the lowest scoring forward group in hockey. You know? You cannot look at this roster, okay? And I'm Mr. If only they had defenders that could hit forwards in, you know, stride with the puck, maybe they'd be generous. Like, that's my bit. That's my whole bit. I've spent years doing it. And I talked at length when they didn't sign Zadorov that, like, where I really thought they'd miss Zadorov wasn't the identity stuff, although, man, I think they could miss that too, but the secondary sort of puck-moving push that he gave the back end. Like, this is my favorite line. I love to talk about defenses that can't move the puck. And I was worried about the sort of two competing thoughts that I saw in evidence in the construction of this roster going into the campaign. All of that said, you cannot look at the Flames roster, the Canucks roster, and the Utah Hockey Club roster and tell me that the Canucks should not, on talent, regardless of how many injuries they've had, be 5 or 6 points clear of both teams. You cannot tell me that. You can't look at the Kings roster, absent Doughty this entire year, and tell me that the Canucks shouldn't be level with the Kings in the Pacific Division. No chance. You're being dishonest. You're being dishonest if you say that. Like,
and again, just watch the two guys play. It's not, if the only problem was they weren't getting accurate stretch passes to spring the rush, we'd all see that. But that's not the only problem.
No.
Just watch them play for any length of time. That's clearly not the only issue here. And the whole idea of, oh, well, it's just, you know, how can you expect them to play their hardest when the roster is so flawed? Because that's the job. Everyone has a flawed roster. It's the salary cap world. There are no perfect rosters. Sometimes things are tough. Sometimes, yeah, your team's not ideal, but you're the best player or one of the best players, and you have to figure out a way through it. That has been completely absent from them way, way, way too often this year. And so I don't want to hear about, oh, this is just Jim Rutherford distracting from the job because he can't find a defenseman. That's why he's doing this. You think this is like a job security play from Jim Rutherford? You think this is the savvy cynical? I'll just torch my two best players in the media. That'll really take the heat off me. If Jim Rutherford was trying to take the heat off himself, I don't think he's doing a very good job of it. I think he's standing up there and being honest because this is the issue with the team and there's no sense in denying it anymore. But I'm tired of the excuses for these players.
Yeah.
Oh, the coach is so mean to them. They don't have the puck-moving defensemen.
Their third pair's not good enough.
How can they play? He doesn't have the line mates. How can they play in these circumstances like everyone else does? What are we talking about?
I'm with you, man. The Gary Mason, by the way, passes along an additional. We've got a B-side.
Oh, wow.
Gary Mason dropping B-sides now.
The slow drip. I love it.
Obviously, a lot of interest in my interview with Jim Rutherford. I mentioned that he said it was a possibility the two players could remain with the team for the rest of the season. Because of space, I couldn't include the full quote, but I think it's important to pass along. I asked him what happens if the team goes on a streak and starts winning regularly. He said, We evaluate things on a regular basis, so we'll see. When you win, everybody feels better. Does that make the players feel better? Does that make these two individuals feel better? All those factors play into this decision. We don't want to trade these players, but we may very well be forced to. So a sliver of hope for those really, you know, huffing the hopium. I still look at the balance of what was said and think this is very much a manager priming the market for tectonic moves and, you know, potentially doing something I think we've seen before, which is leveraging the media as a tool to make sure that his hands stay firmly on the driver's wheel. Right? Fair play.
I get it. I get the hope that, oh, hey, look, why wouldn't we want to keep both players? They're great players. Ideally, they figure it out and we keep them and we go on and win. With this amount of stuff out there now, including from Jim Rutherford, the top of the organization, the top of hockey operations, man, the path forward seems, what do you like to call a narrow path for contention? I would say a very narrow path for these players continuing here in Vancouver.
Well, and we can get into this more in the fourth segment because we've got Landon next one, but it's like the team threw the Hail Mary to try and compete toward the end of the Sedin Twins term, right? And then it was like throw the Hail Mary to replace the Sedin Twins without having to do a full rebuild. Then it was like the Hail Mary to keep Pettersson. Then it was the Hail Mary to keep Quinn Hughes, which is where we're at now.
Yep.
And it's just like, at some point, wouldn't it be cool to just like amass a lot of talent and try and build a really good, durable contender?
Gavin McKenna.
At some point.
Landon DuPont. Let's go.
And by the way, I'm not saying you don't throw the Hail Mary to keep Hughes.
You do. That's the thing. I do think as much as we can look back and...
No, there was a window 2 years ago to take a longer view.
Yeah, but Quinn Hughes, and but since now, then, now Quinn Hughes gone. Has gotten so much better.
Correct.
You know what I mean? That I do think you are mandated to do whatever is in your power in the short term to try to make Quinn Hughes a lifelong Canuck.
100%.
Like, that should be goal number one.
We're all on the same page.
Yeah. After that, well, all bets are off. Who knows what happens after that? But yeah. I have no problem with that being the Hail Mary
shot.
You got
to get him signed, and then you rebuild.
Yes, exactly. And you say, Quinn, have you heard of this kid, Landon DuPont? We think you'd really like playing with him.
Oh, man.
All right. We'll take a break. As mentioned, Landon Ferraro joins us next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets. Weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
I said the exact same thing to Aquilini as I did at the dinner table. Regardless of how bad things are with JT Miller right now and the drama surrounding it, you don't give away this asset for nothing. Give it.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. That's like a footnote in this whole thing now.
Oh, it's more than a footnote.
But that was wild.
It's hilarious.
It was, that was something. That was, of course, Paul Bissonnette on Spit and Chicklets a couple weeks ago. It's Canucks Talk here. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio.
Did you hear their episode last night?
No.
They're, honestly, at this point, they're just like joking about Petey and Miller disliking each other. So they're like, they got a second Elias Pettersson.
Yeah. Well, that and was like, just like, the. And I don't say this to... insult anyone who made the joke, but just like the lowest hanging of all low hanging fruit. But all the jokes were funny, so I appreciate it. Sometimes the lowest hanging fruit's the sweetest. You got to go get it.
I honestly thought their jokes about it were great.
All right, we're coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. Joining us now, we thought we were going to, you know, do some real in-depth hockey X's and O's talk coming off that win in St. Louis last night, but it'll probably be a bit of a different conversation. He's a former NHL player, now an analyst here on 650 and Sportsnet. He is our pal, Landon Ferraro. Landon, how you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good, a lot better than a lot of other things right now.
So... let's say now they probably, I don't know exactly what time they got on the ice for practice in Nashville. Let's say they didn't see it before. They didn't see the article before they were on the ice. You get off the ice. You just had a practice. You come off a win last night and you see on your phones, the president of hockey operations gave this interview with these quotes to Gary Mason at the Globe and Mail. I mean, like what's your reaction as a player? What's the kind of team reaction do you think in a scenario like this?
I mean, like, this one's such a specific case. Like, I can't think of another where it's been, like, this long and been talked about for so long already, and then a president comes out and says it, says the comments that he did. So, I mean, for the guys in the room, like, obviously it's going to spread like wildfire. Like, as soon as the first person sees it, everyone else will. And, I mean, honestly, like, I feel like for some guys it might be some relief. For others, it's like, okay, like this is real now. You know, for the guys that I'm saying that, it, you know, it could be some relief. Like, I'm sure there's a lot of guys in that room, including the guys involved, that are just like, we're done with this. Like we're, you know, we've talked in the past of like, something just needs to happen because this needs to end, because I don't have like the mental capacity or the emotion to be able to like put up with this anymore. Like, I just want to play hockey and play on a team that we're building to something. Like, no one goes into a season or you know, hoping when they start their career, like, man, I hope I can waste a year with a bunch of outside noise. You know, like, it's a bad situation.
So the Canucks are on the road. There's no media traveling with them at the moment. They probably won't talk to the media again until Sunday. And they have a 5 p.m. game, so there's not even going to be a morning skate. I mean, how do you even approach handling commentary going forward if you're one of those players who've previously denied that there was anything there?
Well, I mean, it's a tough one, but I mean, at the same time, like, I know what we all wanted, you know, Pettersson or Miller to come out and say, whatever, call it a month ago or however long it's been now, but... You know, like, what are they going to say? Like, if you go out in front of the camera and say, like, this is the issue and it needs to be solved, like, you've now basically either publicly asked for a trade or publicly said, I need one of my teammates gone. You know, like, that's never going to happen. So, but, you know, Quinn Hughes and Tocchet, like, those guys all spoke about it and, you know, acknowledged that there was something going on there. So, like, it's not like... they've been hiding this whole time, but at the same time, like, it gets to a certain point, like, you can't hide from it anymore. Like, it's something that's obviously not, well, I mean, Rutherford said it point blank, like, it's just nothing, like, it goes away for a bit and it comes back and festers. Like, that's not a situation that you can let continue on. But, you know, I do like the fact that Rutherford also says, like, you know, but we're not going to rush into anything. Mm-hmm. Like, we can't ruin this team's future because these two guys don't get along.
How, like, difficult? Yeah. Sorry, Landon, to cut you off. But I mean, I can't help thinking, like, obviously we're all looking at this through the perspective of Quinn Hughes, or a lot of people are. And Jim Rutherford talked about that as well. Like, hey, we can't do a rebuild here. We got to try to make sure Quinn Hughes is a lifelong Canuck. And I think that's absolutely the right approach. When you have a player like that, you can't, you know, be casual about the potential of him walking. You got to try to do what you can to keep him around. But, you know, even beyond Quinn Hughes, like, there are guys who are signed medium to long term here that presumably you have some interest in keeping around. I mean, Jake DeBrusk, you know, you just signed him in the last offseason. Philip Hronek got a new big deal. There's other players who have signed, you know, signed 3 or 4 years into the future. How difficult is it for those guys in this circumstance, right, where you kind of almost feel like your season or your career is on pause while you're waiting for this situation to get figured out?
Well, I mean, I imagine it's really tough, right? Like, you, especially in DeBrus' situation, like, Hronek gets his deal, but he'd already been here, yeah. You know, and, you know, was on the team. Like, for DeBrusk, it's, you know, he sees what can be in Boston and sees what it can be here and in the money and term and what they have and what they just did last year. Like, there's so much excitement coming into this season. And then this is your first year with the team and there's a lot going on and it's not at all what you thought it was going to be. But I also think in the situation that they're in now where, you know, like, clearly one, two, or both something's going to happen eventually here, whether it takes all the way to summer because they're going to make sure they get a good deal, or it happens sooner. Like, you have pieces that are here that you know you want to build around, that want to be here as well. And so you just start looking at how you can start placing in and what you need to fill in past that. Like, the hard thing here is it's not two, you know, it's not a left winger and a right winger. Like, it's your two first centers, and we know how hard those are to come by. And then if you're trying to replace, like, you can't just go grab that. Like, that's the biggest significance here. It's not that it's, you know, two core guys. Like, that's happened before where it's, you know, it's two important players and it just doesn't work, and you kind of move them out, and obviously it goes a lot quieter than it's had, you know, it has happened here. But, you know, it's the centers. Like, that's the big ticket here. And, you know, I don't envy the management staff, because, like, it doesn't matter what you think of how they've done at their job, whether you think they've done a good job or bad job, no one can plan for this. And, like, it's a tough situation.
With sort of what we've seen from this team, though, Landon, I mean, is there enough here that with some addition by subtraction and just a consistent work rate around one of the best top pairs in hockey, you know, even if you were cobbling it together with, like, Pugh Suter as your second line center, could you not? I mean, they have the same record as, in fact, they have a worse record than the Flames. You know, it's, like, very clear that they're not performing to the level of the talent in this lineup. I mean, could they not potentially have some addition by subtraction factor, especially if they think the mix in the locker room is part of the reason why they've been so inconsistent?
I mean, yeah, you can definitely look at it that way, and that can happen for sure. But let's not, you know, lose the fact of, if none of this was going on, they still have Dakota Joshua that missed the whole start of the season, and now, you know, it looks like he's getting close, so that's good. But he was just starting to work back. Like, that's a big piece that they've been missing. You know, will he get, you know, what is he going to get to his career stats last year? Who knows? But his size and mobility on the ice is missed. So that piece is, you know, kind of in and out. You're already needing and talking about adding another defenseman into that group. Like, there's already a pieces that need to come in and know that they needed help. Well, now you're going to subtract two of your best center, or one of your best centers. Whatever comes back, like, it can be helpful. At least you'll be moving, and the team knows, and the group of guys know, like, okay, this is what's moving forward. That will be 100% relief and help as soon as something happens. But, like, it's hard to say. Like, the inconsistency is because they don't play like a team every single night. And it's hard because you watch a game like last game and they play great, and you see, like, okay, there's something here, but it doesn't work. And so, like, you're going to take those players out, and it can add some help to, or, you know, kind of alleviate some situations. But at the end of the day, you still have a group that was needing some more help. Like, it's not that simple. I don't think it's going to be, you know, easy as soon as this happens either.
You know, the one thing I think from just an analyst's perspective about this interview, Landon, is, I mean, you and I have talked a bunch of times, right, about, okay, Rick Tocchet again is saying these guys got to move their feet more. Why is that so difficult? Why has it been such a hard message to get through to these players and similar things like that? And I think this kind of puts it all in perspective. Not that we didn't know there was something going on, or maybe the locker room dynamic was off, but when you have Jim Rutherford saying, like, yeah, this issue is we don't have the team chemistry, and therefore it's very, very difficult for the players to be consistent and do what they need to do on a nightly basis, it does kind of put a lot of what we're seeing kind of into clarity, right? Okay, that's why the simple things have been such a struggle for this team on such a regular basis. So I guess I feel like, at least from that perspective, it answers a lot of questions that we've had about this team this year.
Yeah, like, it's nice in any situation when you have the guy at the very top saying, this is what's happening. And so there's no more, like, you know, for the past long while here, like, we have a decent idea, but it's still like, as we're talking amongst ourselves, like it's still a lot of plugging holes and just your gut feel about what's going on and things that have happened in the past you're trying to apply here to try and get some clarity. But when you finally have the guy from the top saying it, everything kind of starts to fall into place. Like so many of Tockett's interviews, especially post games, where like he's trying not to absolutely lose it. Like he's just staying composed, and you got to give him a ton of credit because I couldn't imagine how many times that, you know, they do everything they can. They get everyone as prepped as they possibly can. And then after the game, they look at themselves in the coach's room and be like, their minds just weren't here tonight. And there's nothing that like a coach can help fix that from time to time when things aren't quite right with a team. But when it's every single day and you have to kind of sit there and make sure that all the outside noise isn't there before game, like before puck drop, like that's just too much to ask of any coach. Like that's why guys are professionals and they play at this level is they can police themselves, meaning like they can get themselves ready 95% of the time for games. It's the other 5% the coach has got to make sure that, hey, they're not as mentally sharp right now, or this guy's a little off. I got to push a button here and make sure he's going. But if you got to do that every single game, every single day, how can you expect that coaching staff to make that happen right now? And I like that Rutherford kind of said that he did, or said what he did in backing Tockett.
How hard do you think it's just going to be the balance of this trip, the next little bit, to focus for a team that's already struggled to focus, it seems, game to game in the wake of sort of this? Like now, there's no element to which it can be like, oh, that outside noise, that's you guys. It's like, nah, pretty clearly not. The call is, in fact, coming from inside the house here. How much more difficult is it going to be for this team to do what they kind of need to from a consistent effort level perspective?
I honestly don't think it's going to be any harder. And I don't know if I'm just blowing over this too quickly, but to me, like, none of those guys, they were saying that stuff to us and trying to downplay it, like all this stuff, but like in the room, there's no way that they have, like everyone doesn't know exactly where the situation sits and what's been going on all the time, right? So to them, like, I don't think it's anything more added. Like, how many more of us guys like can be in the scrum at morning skate asking the same questions they've already been answering? Like, all of us are already there, right? Like, there's not going to be 15 more people all of a sudden, and now it's even more of this, you know, circus going on while they're trying to get ready for a game. Like, I feel like it's honestly almost the exact same of where it is. Like, there's a bit more clarity for us, but on the inside, I feel like no one was surprised with what was said.
Landon, I mean, we've talked so much about Quinn Hughes and the season he's having. Does it look even more impressive in light of this, right? When you consider the impact that Jim Rutherford is saying it's had on the team as a whole, and yet Quinn Hughes almost every night has been simply sensational, and certainly recently, I mean, that pass to Connor Garland last night, the couple of goals against Washington, like as the temperature has risen and the noise has gotten louder, he's gotten even better. I think we almost have to look at his season in even more positive light now than we already did.
Yeah, honestly, like it makes me respect what he said the other day even more, because I thought I kind of understood, you know, I thought I understood what he was saying. And when he said, like, you know, when someone asked him, like, how do you feel? Oh, it was Ian McIntyre was asking, like, you know, how do you feel after, you know, like Tockett's comments saying you're trying to do too much because you care so much. And he's like, yeah, like, I do feel responsible for what's going on in this room. Like, I'm the captain. Like, I feel responsible, and I want to be, you know, the reason that it turns around. Like, that guy takes this job serious, and he takes his extra responsibilities as captain. Like, you know that he takes this home with him, and he wants things to go right because he sees what the team can be, and he wants to win, and he wants to win now. So you're right, like what he's been able to do this year, but it almost puts it, like you're saying it, you know, it makes it that much more special. And I do agree, but it makes it that much more just like kind of puts me in awe that he can carry all of this and yet go out and literally carry the team night to night. And I don't know, like it might not have been the best analysis there, but like just how driven he is and he can put it by, like it's honestly, like it's awe-inspiring. I said it the other night after his other second goal at home of, I'm like, you just have to laugh sometimes. Like when he puts that through Suter's legs between or like under his shins on that first Garland goal, like who else is completing that on purpose? Like if I'm in that situation, like I'm coming down and I'm like, well, I kind of see a hole. Like I'm going to put it through their heart and just hope it gets through. Like he's putting that through with full confidence it's going to get there. And he's doing little plays like that every single shift, and it's amazing to watch.
It's the combination of the talent with the professionalism and maturity he's also demonstrating, right? And the way that stands in contrast to the other highest paid players on the team, you put it all together, it really is remarkable what he's been able to do in tough circumstances this season. Landon, you know, we were hoping to have a longer conversation, but we will at some point. We'll have you in studio at some point and really dig into the hockey side of things here as soon as the drama around this team settles down. So really should be any day now, but always appreciate chatting with you. Thanks very much for doing this, man.
Well, yeah, I'm just disappointed that we've wasted a really good win. We didn't even get to talk about it.
I know. It didn't,
have a good one,
the good vibes didn't last long. Thanks, Landon.
Yeah. See ya.
That is Landon Ferraro, former NHL player, now a regular here on Sportsnet 650 and Sportsnet, of course, as well, Canucks analyst.
Also obscured or overshadowed tonight, but not by, you know, we're not going to let it be overshadowed. Happy birthday to Stan Smith.
Absolutely.
The best.
We could use another Stan Smith speech right now.
No kidding.
Remember?
Well, we could always use another Stan Smith speech in our lives. One of the true lions in Canucks franchise history. A lot of pride.
Yeah.
Obviously, that he showed as a member of this organization across a lifetime.
Doing basically every possible job.
Only undefeated general manager in
That's
franchise
right.
history.
That's right.
Undefeated GM Stan Smith. Happy birthday, Stan.
Happy birthday, Stan Smith. Absolutely. I'm glad we got that in. Now, we have a few minutes before we take a break here. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And I did want to highlight in not just on kind of Rutherford's diagnosis of the situation and the immediate prescription that they're going to have to, they might have to trade one or both of these players. And as people have texted in and you read as well, but worth, you know, re-emphasizing, Gary Mason following up his article with a couple of tweets where he included some extra quotes from Jim Rutherford.
Now he paraphrased those quotes in the article.
Yes.
And so you're seeing some fans, again, the hopium element, who are like, pretty big things to omit from the article. No, he mentioned both of those things.
Yes.
And then provided the full quotes.
And I also don't know that it changes things
not
that much,
all.
But for the purposes of completion, I'll read it here. So this is Gary Mason saying, I asked Jim Rutherford what happens if the team goes on a streak and starts winning regularly. He said, we evaluate things on a regular basis, so we'll see. When you win, everybody feels better. Does that make the players feel better? Does that make these two individuals feel better? All those factors play into the decision. We don't want to trade these players, but we may very well be forced to. Those last two sentences, we don't want to trade these players, but we may very well be forced to. Of course they don't want to trade these players, but they may be forced to. That's the whole thing encapsulated.
One of us has had a stroke.
No, you read this last segment. I'm going to,
so
just
me.
To make sure everyone.
Okay, cool.
Everyone hears
I was like,
it.
Either I memory hold
no,
that
no, no,
this
no,
didn't
no.
happen. Okay,
in
sorry.
Radio, it's called a rate refresh.
Got it. See, I thought we were doing a podcast.
I just want to make
radio.
Sure no one can, no one can accuse us of having left out crucial context from Gary
it's
Mason
not
on
that
Twitter.
Crucial.
I'm just putting it out there, man. Anyways,
You're
as I said, I don't think it really changes the. I don't think it really changes the thrust of the article that much.
I think it does. Let's read it again.
Let's read it a few more times and see what we think.
The charm.
Let's really dig into this. But the part I want to focus in on was not just this rift is tearing the team apart and we might have to trade one of these players. We don't think it's going to happen with this group. But then the kind of next steps after that. So Just to read a little bit here from the interview with Gary Mason. If we're going to completely start over, that means he goes. He being Quinn Hughes, Rutherford told the Globe, and we'd like to figure out a way that he's here forever. What does that look like? We'll have to do the best we can in trades, Rutherford said. Whatever assets you get in return, you may turn them into something else, and we have to work our way back into being a contending team. Now, Gary Mason says...
So that's very much in line with the Horvat thing we've been talking about.
Yeah, and he says, in these times, you don't trade a number one center and get a number one center back. That's Mason. Those deals aren't going to be there, Rutherford acknowledges. So yeah, if a center goes out of here, we have to get some kind of center back, but it's not going to be the same as the center going out. It might not even be a number two center, but you'd have to do the best of what we have until we figure out how to fill that spot back in. And then, of course, you have to get extra things in any trade that you can either use in the future to flip for NHL players now or for other positions or things like that. So basically, the like for like, apples for apples, get an immediate impact player, that would be amazing. But there's also an understanding that that's not going to happen. And the plan very much is collect assets and then not just do the Horvat for Hronek two-step once, but potentially multiple times here.
Yeah.
Certainly, if you're sending both guys out, you want to do it with centers, but you're also going to have to figure out a way to turn any of your other assets into impact right now NHL pieces. And like, that's a really detailed roadmap. There's a lot of question marks, obviously, because it's difficult to pull off. But what you should expect if you're a Canucks fan is, I think, a pretty aggressive posture from the Canucks. If they are able to move these players, if they ultimately decide to, let's say they trade both of them, I think the flurry of moves after that could result is going to be fascinating. Because this is Jim Rutherford saying, like, okay, if we get those obstacles out of the way, we're not going to let the assets we get back burn a hole in our pocket. We're going, we're pushing ahead. It's full speed to try to build a contender and convince Quinn Hughes to stay.
Yeah, you know what's too bad is the Canucks spent so much time and effort building this team in a way where they would accrue cap space throughout the season and be positioned to be a main player if one of those like situations, we talk about this a lot, the idea of like those situations you can't expect that shake loose, we see a couple a year, right? You want to be that team that seizes on the guy. And it just turns out that the two biggest pieces, aside from Mikko Rantanen, right? So the two of the three biggest pieces in the league that seem poised to surprisingly shake loose this season happen to be...
Are your players.
On the Canucks. And that's just... Again, this is where... I mean, I certainly... I'm not trying to absolve management or defend management even. Just like when I think about what's happened here, right? I just can't get over that this group of players has let it get to this point, that these individuals have let it get to this point, especially given that, you know, I think management had gotten to a point where they surrounded them appropriately with a team that should have easily been able to at least like make the playoffs and have a fun season and be a tough out when they got there.
Yeah.
It's shocking. Shocking stuff.
It is. It truly is. And you're right. Basically, he's describing, okay, we're going to collect these assets and then hope that a player as good as one of these guys or close to it becomes available from another team down the road, or at least, not just down the road. That's the thing. The timeline is so accelerated because of the Quinn Hughes situation. You're hoping it happens in the next like 12 months.
Oh yeah. We're talking off season stuff.
Yeah. Or like before next year's deadline. So it would have to be an extremely expedited process to try to get back to contender status or get to contender status while Quinn Hughes still under contract here.
Or get close. I mean, the thing is you have all of next season, but you also have like the draft in 2026. You know what I'm saying? Before he even becomes eligible
for an extension.
Right. So show some progress next year. Have a functional season. Right. Like this is going to be your best hope anyway. Show some progress, have a functional season, keep making savvy moves, because that's the other part of this, right? Like, if you keep mining value, if you keep finding Sherwoods, right, players are going to believe they can win with you. So, they will.
If the high-end talent is there.
Well, for sure. You're going to have to find some Sherwoods on the high end. You're going to have to find some Hronics, right? Like, that's the real key here. You know, it's not enough to land Pugh Suter. You need to find Hronek and DeBrusk's, you know?
And more than that.
And more than that.
Really.
And better versions of that.
Yes, which is very, very difficult to do.
They're in a tough spot.
They're in a very, very tough spot now. All right, we'll take a break. Final segment coming up here. We'll continue to unpack the commentary from Jim Rutherford and read your texts as well. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can send your thoughts in. Final segment of Canucks Talk coming up next on Sportsnet 650.
I'm not, listen, you guys, in a sense, the outer world have created this thing. Like, this isn't a thing. So, am I bothered? No, but you guys are just wasting your time. I don't care. You guys want to talk about it? You want to ask me? Ask me all you want. I can bring up PD and we can do the interview together if that would make you guys happy.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drancier. That was JT Miller from, I don't know, a month ago or so, more than that, 6 weeks ago. I would like to see a joint interview.
Yeah.
With Elias Pettersson and JT Miller. That would make me happy, JT. It's a good idea. Let's see. Maybe when they get back in town.
Don't suggest it because we're not going to get it.
No, we are definitely not going to get it.
Dom's already working on it for 32 Thoughts.
Man, what a get that would be.
He's shaking his head.
I want nothing to do with those two players.
Wow.
Okay, Dom Rutherford.
I was going to say, we'd have to stop making fun of you for constantly referencing 32 Thoughts. If you landed that interview,
yeah,
you'd be beyond reproach. Respect. Beyond reproach.
But I appreciate that you are taking today's revelations, probably not revelations to you, given the company you keep, but taking today's resolutions as hard as most Canucks fans. I think that's endearing.
I'm not going to lie. I'm still a fan.
Yeah, fair enough. Good. I think it's important to be honest.
Dom did casually mention that he, quote, hangs out with Friedge in the prep room today.
That's the only reason I know, Steph.
An incredible name drop. It's like, oh, really? I didn't know. You produce 32 Thoughts? Interesting.
A little podcast.
A little podcast you might have heard of. 650.
Called Canucks Talk.
That's right. Number one on Dom's resume.
I work with the two best insiders in the game.
We're coming to you live from the Kintech studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. And you can send your texts in. This one comes in from Sparky. Where do Besser and Demko fit in all of this dysfunction? And I don't know if Sparky means like from a personality perspective in the terms of the locker room dynamic, or if he means from a what their future of the team is. And I think that's the more interesting side of this is, you know, we're talking about the core. Well, those guys have been a part of the core. Certainly Demko, but even Brock Besser, I think it's fair. You know, he's the third best forward on the team. It's supposed to be. He's a part of the core of this team, and he's a pending unrestricted free agent. Thatcher Demko has 1 year left on his deal. We all know about his injury history and the way he's struggled since coming back. We've also heard from Kevin Woodley saying, look, that's to be expected, but you should have a level of confidence that he'll be able to get back to his previous level of performance. But I do, you know, let's not pretend like the only big decisions to be made here are the futures of JT Miller and Elias Pettersson. Though Thatcher Demko and Brock Besser, yeah, they're back burner stuff, I guess, but those are two really good players who have been really important to this team, and you got to make big decisions about them as well.
Well, and how good was Lankinen last night?
He was really good.
Like, he made some really good saves, and he made some really good saves against the Capitals, too. The Canucks don't have another back-to-back set until they return from the Four Nations tournament when they play the Golden Knights and then the Utah Hockey Club back-to-back in late February. How many starts would you expect Demko to get between now and the break?
One.
They play Wednesday, they play Friday, they play Sunday, they play Tuesday, they play Thursday, they play Saturday.
One. But also, I don't know, when having said that, how much is of the organization now is hell-bent on making the playoffs? You know what I mean?
No, they still got to make the playoffs. No.
Why?
Why not?
They're dancing
around. But why is that the most important thing?
It's not the most important thing, but it matters.
Is it more important than
you think this organization doesn't want playoff revenue?
But okay, is Jim, like, does Jim Rutherford giving this interview, is that with the design of making the playoffs, or is that with larger, bigger picture stuff in mind?
Well, I mean, from a short-term performance standpoint, if you think that the relationships in the room have dented your ability to ice a consistent hockey club, then, I mean, doesn't it follow that, yes, part of this might be to stake out ground to do what's necessary to compete?
But I would buy that if there was... Now, I know they've come really close to dealing both of those players, but it's also always paired with the, well, we're going to be patient. Maybe they'll be here past the trade deadline, right? There's no guarantee we're going to move these guys. If you were looking at it as, man, we got to save this season, you're lowering your price and you're making the move. If you're trying to do the addition by subtraction, fix the chemistry and go on a run thing. But I think this is a... this is like Project Convince Quinn Hughes. And yeah, making the playoffs, would that be great this year as part of Project Convince Quinn Hughes? Probably. It would probably help. But what happens after this season is going to be way more important. So,
well, potentially. I mean, unless you're able to get returns that, for example, add, you know, a good second pair defenseman to the mix. And, you know, you're not able to replace two top centermen, but you're able to get one other top centerman. And your team competes harder and more consistently than they have so far with sort of a newish group or a rejigged team. And, you know, yeah, this team still has talent. There's still an elite top pair here. Injuries happen to other teams. Mm-hmm. You know, you can still make the playoffs. You're probably in that win and anything can happen territory, which is sucky. That's a crummy place to be, as we know. But I don't think you're waving a white flag on this season. The team's 1 point behind the Flames.
No, it's not that you're waving a white flag, but it's that you've got to balance your priorities.
Yeah, but you've got to, short-term priorities still matter here, no? Surely. They should. They should.
The players do want to play in the playoffs.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I guess that would be nice for Quinn Hughes if he gets to play in the playoffs.
Does Operation Convince Quinn Hughes not ideally
include a playoff appearance?
Well, not just a playoff appearance, but like a playoff appearance where you've got like a plucky, hardworking group that brings it. I mean, are you beating... Look, here's the truth. With Elias Pettersson and JT Miller on this roster, this team is not beating Edmonton or Vegas.
Or
Winnipeg. Wow. Maybe Minnesota. Kaprizov's hurt now. You know, I'm just saying, like, they could win a round.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, this team's ceiling is... This team's ceiling, even if things had gone well this season, was probably winning 3 games against the Oilers. Like, they probably hit their absolute ceiling as a group. Anyway, last year, to be totally honest with you, especially given that the Oilers had like an .850 save percentage and still managed to win that series. You know, like that's not, in some ways that series was not as close as it seemed, truthfully. And I think if you don't buy that, you didn't watch game 6 and 7. Right?
I just think,
so,
okay,
what are we talking about?
But which is going to be more important long-term for the Canucks? Squeaking into the playoffs this year or having some level of certainty, gathering more information about Thatcher Demko? That's the point I'm trying to make here, right? Is that, okay, yeah, making the playoffs would be great. I'm not saying wave the white flag, but what, are you going to keep Brock Besser past the deadline?
Almost.
Unsigned?
Certain. I don't think so.
So you're already acknowledging that longer-term priorities are taking a front seat, and yeah, you'd love to make the playoffs, but you're not going to harm the future of your franchise in order to chase that goal.
But I also don't think you can. I mean, I don't think Thatcher Demko, like, with what we've seen the last week and how Lankinen has played, I think this club's going to ride Lankinen. Do you not think that?
I think there probably are. I don't think it's as cut and dried as it seems to be, though. I don't think it's as simple as, well, you're in a playoff race, you need 2 points every night, so they're going to ride Lankinen.
Oh, come on, man. They're totally going to do that.
How long ago was it that Patrick Alvin said they want to see a lot more Thatcher Demko down the stretch?
And then they give him 3 straight starts, and he struggled, and now he's...
So you're out on Demko? It's over?
I'm not out on Demko, but right now, where this team's positioned, and what hockey teams require, the volume, like the choices that players make, the choices that coaches make, like if there's one guy who you feel like gives you a best chance to win, you're playing that guy. We see it every year.
Isn't that, but like this, isn't that just another short-term example of short-term thinking for this team, though?
For sure, but we saw it last year. Like Casey DeSmith struggled against Minnesota and then very promptly lost his job, and they rode Demko even though they had the, you know, I mean, not first place in the division sewn up, but pretty close. They were very likely to win the division, and that didn't change the fact that they rode Demko because he gave them the best chance to win every night. They didn't, like, that's how it goes, man.
I'm not saying it's going to be a 50-50 split, but man, okay, they have six left before the break. Like, I've seen some people say he could get all six. Two
for Demko?
That wouldn't
shock me. That wouldn't shock me if he plays well.
I don't know, man. I don't think you can wave the white flag on Demko this early and say, like, well, I'm not, so are you not going to put any, there's like, you have to invest time. You have to invest reps in getting him back, don't you?
Jamie,
I mean, before the summer?
Why are they exclusive? Like, why is riding the hot hand not, like, you're saying that's waving the white flag on Demko. Why can't it?
Jamie's basically saying they need to resuscitate Demko's value enough. And in even if they're moving on from him, right? That's what you're saying? You need to see what you've got.
I get that, but, like, do you not ride the hot hand, Jamie? Like, if he's hot, if Lankinen's hot, you can't just be like, no, we have to see Demko.
If your number one goal is to get into the playoffs at all costs, then, yeah, that's exactly what you do. Of course it is.
But if you're the
value,
coach and you're the players, you're not going to do that.
Well, the players don't get to make the decision last time
I checked. But they're playing to win, right?
Yeah,
of course. Look, fine. I guess
you're
the organization's out on Demko, I guess.
I'm just saying a developmental, like, you're not going with developmental priorities in terms of how you configure your lineup just yet. We're not there yet. You know, the team shouldn't be making those decisions. They should still be focused on being a relatively normal winning team while also trying to ice a team that competes an awful lot harder more consistently than this team has over the course of the season. Like, that's where we're at. And if that means...
I just think if you're having these conversations about Pettersson and Miller, as much as I don't want to discount the possibility of addition by subtraction, but you're already admitting that...
Correct.
There's a longer-term thing going on here. You're already admitting that. So why not... I'm not saying, Demko starts 80% of the games here or anything, but, like, you're going to give Lankinen six in a row?
I'm going to give Lankinen in games, provided that he's playing well and gives me a chance to win, yeah.
What's better for a convinced Quinn Hughes season?
Exactly. You can't be like, hey, and we're going to punt this season. He's going to hate that.
I'm not saying give Demko all the games. I'm not saying disregard it completely, but you can't throw it out as a consideration.
Well, no. But
look, I think one of the things where this conversation is illuminating is, as we've talked about at length, they're in a very difficult position here.
Very difficult.
There are a lot of conflicting priorities that the team might wish to pursue at this point right now. Yeah, what gave me that idea? But it was like you're right. If you're trying to make the playoffs, and Rick Tocchet, who, by the way, is not under contract officially beyond this season, right? Mutual option. We know how that always plays into things here, as much leverage as he does have still with this organization. You know, he's going to be motivated, of course, to try to win as many games as possible. I understand that. I just don't think you can afford to neglect the project of trying to rebuild Thatcher Demko, considering his contractual situation, considering how important he has been to this franchise and what you might want to do in the crease going forward. So, look, Lankinen's playing great right now. He's the starter. That's fine. But you have to find some sort of consistent goal, consistent role for Thatcher Demko as well here. And, like, I don't, if he plays, if Lankinen gets all six before the break, I mean, that's a long time between NHL games for Thatcher Demko. And given his problem has been trying to get back into shape, trying to get back to his game in the middle of the season, I'm not sure how a layoff of that long really helps him get back to that point. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and this one comes in from Jay in OK Falls, who says, regardless of the outcome of the pending trades, Canucks fans are now forever going to be doing a vibe check on this team. This drama eclipses the Bure exit, the Linden firing, and the Luongo benching. Still can't believe this is real. And these two are, These two are adults that have competed at the highest level for the majority of their lives. Makes no sense. That's from Jay in OK Falls. That is an interesting question. Where would you put this in Canucks franchise drama history? Is this number one? Does this surpass Luongo after the Heritage Classic? Does this surpass Lyndon Messier? I don't think it surpasses Lyndon Messier. Well, I don't think it's there quite yet.
Hurry on the way out.
The thing about Lyndon Messier was that so here's the reason that Lyndon Messier was messier was.
Aha.
No, I was absolutely unintentional, but I realized what I was getting into about halfway in. Kind of like when you take a cold plunge and you get up to your knees and you're like, well, I guess I'm doing this. It's not actually your knees.
We know, Thomas. We know.
When you reconsider your life choices.
We know.
Anyway. Okay. Remind me what we're talking about.
Hold on. What were we talking about? The drama, Lyndon Messier.
Right. They had a triumvirate of general managers.
Yes.
Mike Penny, Steve Tambellini, and Mike Keenan. No one really knew who had their hand on the wheel. Tony Gallagher, though, once insisted to me that you know that Mike Keenan made the Lyndon trade because who else would be wild enough as a thinker to actually trade Trevor Lyndon out of Vancouver. But that was messier. That was messier for sure. But I think this is messier than Luongo.
Yes, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's Lyndon Messier at the top.
The Luongo thing is like, oh, we don't want to trade the older. We want to keep the younger guy. We like the younger goalie. Like every team makes that mistake every time out. By the way, every time you have a really good older goalie and a really good younger goalie, trade the younger goalie because they're goalies. They're fungible. Trade the guy who has more value. That's like a rule that teams should follow and a mistake, by the way, that the Canucks have made multiple times over the last 25 years. Anyway, that one was more routine. That's like a player evaluation error.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't Schneider and Luongo were butts.
Yeah. That wasn't like, I mean, I guess it came to a head because of the Torts thing at the Heritage Classic, but it wasn't an internal personal drama story before that.
What made it messy was the club's abrupt change of pace or change of heart at the 2013 NHL entry draft.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was certainly an ownership angle to that. And then of course, you know, you have Francesco Aquilini showing up at Luongo's house in Florida, and that part's tricky. Like that's where it gets messier, is sort of in the summer of 2013. But for the most part, that was a relatively conventional hockey story and a like functional professional one. The team still was winning a lot of games throughout that entire stretch, right? Like it was only the Heritage Classic season, the Torts season, where things fell apart. So, yeah, I mean, I think this is way messier than that.
650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dom, you have a bit of audio from or at least a suggestion from our sister station in Toronto, from Kipper and Bourne.
So Real Kipper and Bourne, they're going to come up in the national hour here in a few minutes. But just before they do that, Nick Kiprios just made the suggestion on that show. He's saying JT Miller for Morgan Rielly straight up, and that the money would match.
No, I'm out.
Awful. I'm terrible. Out. Why? Why would anyone?
I love that both of you. Nope.
No.
Nope.
The Morgan Rielly contract is sneaky.
I don't know. Like, the last thing I want the Canucks to acquire for one of these players is a 30-year-old defenseman under big money long term who gets most of his value on the power play
and who struggles enormously defensively.
Yeah.
Breaking news: JT Miller traded for.
Morgan Rielly joins us now. Welcome home, Morgan. What can you bring to the team?
You don't think Craig Berube is making one call to talk and talks like,
he's a creaky door?
I to me, you can lose a trade.
This is like the people suggesting Pettersson to Ottawa. You think Travis Green's getting that call from Steve Staios and being like, yeah, let's go. Loved that last time.
You can lose a trade for JT Miller, but not if it means you're committing long-term money. Oh, yeah, that was great.
Would love a reunion there.
Loved that. Like, you can lose the trade for JT Miller if you're not immediately committing long-term money to another suspect player, right? Or a player who you don't think is going to help you win. And I don't think Morgan Riley playing behind Quinn Hughes is what this team needs. So why commit that type of money? Like, if all you're getting out of the JT Miller deal is cap space, that's going to be a really tough pill to swallow, but at least it gives you something to build on. And, you know, presumably there'd be a future asset or two in there as well. If you're just doing it straight up, no extra futures for a guy who's a poor fit for what this team needs going forward, I mean, like, literally, why make the move? Then you may as well just hold on to these guys and see if they can figure it out. So, sorry, Kipper, but no, I'm not buying that one.
No, no.
But make sure you tune in for Kipper and Bourne.
Sneaky, sneaky. The Morgan Riley contract was a really bad bet for this sort of Maple Leafs window. Sneaky.
Was that Dubas?
Yeah. Very sneaky, I think. I didn't like it the day it happened. I've said it multiple times. Toronto has never caught up to me. They will.
They already have. They have, apparently. They're trying to get it, ship him out of there.
They will. I'm sorry. This is one where it's like, I was right 4 years ago. I'm right today. And in 5 years, people will be like, yeah, that was right.
I love that in the bullpen, you were like bragging about how you're always 2 years ahead, and now you're 4 years ahead.
Well, I was 4 years ahead on that one because it's out of market.
Also, Dom was like, this is a big ego day for you, Drance. And we were all immediately like, that's every day. Yeah.
Is it a day that ends with Y?
Really? Today is a big ego day for Drance?
I'm just saying, there's these frustrating moments where I know something for sure, and it takes the market a while to catch up. Kuzmenko rebuilding, on and on.
You're the Usain Bolt of Vancouver.
No, it's just how it is, and I find it frustrating.
Well, we'll see what Kipper and Bourne have to say beyond the JT Miller for Morgan Riley suggestion. But Kipper has had some interesting intel on this one. So that's coming up next. Of course, the People's Show, and then Canucks Central with Dan and Sack coming up later on as
great
well.
Great info. Iffy hypotheticals.
Iffy
it's
hypotheticals.
The Bourne and Kipper Show coming up next.
Coming up next. We'll be back tomorrow for the crossover. Always excited for that here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.